Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I am deeply grateful you chose to be with me on this sixth day of December. Here we go into the Christmas season. It's an amazing time of indulgence and sentimentality and all of that that we like to do. And even in this pandemic, we're finding that people insist upon doing their thing. And I hope you do it if you're going to do it, and you do it in safety. I've entitled this program, What is Real? Every so often, I will get some emails that I can't use, but inside them are little gems that people ask, like, what is this and what is that? So I thought it would be good to take some emails out and kind of highlight the parts that I thought were relevant to my audience, hopefully you, and then go from there. So this is why I call it What is Real. This will be just little short bursts of questions. I think it's important to understand what we call real. For most of us, real is what touches our skin, our senses. And that's as far as it really goes. But there is a reality that is beyond our senses and our body, our human mind. There is a reality that exists all around us and through us. Why is it we don't see this quote-unquote reality, this what I call divine reality? Because we're too busy as people conforming to what our senses tell us is reality. And when my senses tell me this is real, this is not, then I miss. And I don't even give it consideration. So what I am trying to do with my students, as well as present to you here on radio, is the idea that there is a reality that lives within us all that is absolutely heavenly. It is a beautiful bliss that lives within us. And this exists as our life, but we tend not to get involved in it because we're in the nuts and bolts of our nuts mentality, our mental acuity. And I've always found it difficult to talk about the infinite with people who can only think in the mental acuity that they have come to accept about themselves, which is literal-mindedness. It's hard for me to talk to you about what is real when your mind is focused and centered on what is ephemeral, what is dreamlike. When my mind has made up its ideas and its beliefs and its theories, and it goes along with that, and it doesn't flow with the natural harmony of love. So how do I talk to you in the mentality that you have about things that aren't of your and my human mentality? It's very, very difficult. This is why silence is so important, because in the depths of a silence, we tend to be able to communicate with each other that other world, that liminal world that lives within us all. And I'm going to try desperately today to help with that. So to me, it must be understood that reality is not what touches my senses. Reality is the totality of my life, the totality of consciousness, the totality of love. It is all about love. And the human mentality is not privy to love. It doesn't care about love. It can't contemplate love. It just goes on and on and on in the ritual of its own manner, its ego, the emperor, as I like to call it, of all malice that we listen to. So the first question goes to Gabriel. He lives in Los Angeles, California. He listens to us often, and he had a long email. And then right in the middle of it, he asked, what is real to you? What is real truth? He said. To me, he asked. Gabriel, truth, we're looking for ultimate truth, a truth that will stand up at all areas of our life. And there are truths that stand up. As a man thinketh, so is he. You know, that kind of thing. That's the truth that most people can adhere to. But I go further. I don't think that's a truth. That leads to a truth. Many of the teachings of the Buddha, many of the teachings of Jesus, many and all of the teachings of Lhasa were all given to us in the form of awakening. The awakening of the heart to love. And that is the only truth. Love is the only truth there is. Everything else kind of moves around it. So what I'm saying to you in this is the ultimate truth about love is not something that can be conjured up through the mentality of a Greg Penn. Greg cannot understand love. When presented with love, Greg will become very confused, even distraught at times, because the whole effort of love, the whole issue of it is based on a compassion that Greg does not have. And that compassion is not sympathy. That compassion is a form of intelligence, a deep, profound intelligence that links us together in a oneness with each other. And the more we respect this love and we understand in compassion that what I do to myself, I will do to you, and what I will do to you will become a part of myself. So when I am dealing with people, and you are dealing with people who are unkind or people who are rude, and there's tons of them out there now, if I treat them with the disrespect that I feel on the inside of myself because I don't believe in what they say or how they act, or I think that they're shall we say, morally lower than I am, or whatever I may think that is derogatory. If I act and react from that point of view about them, or even silently think to myself, oh, you're one of them, and there are thems out there, there really are, we have to understand that that is human nature. And if it is human nature, it is not the ultimate reality. It is not the ultimate real truth. I think when Jesus said God is love, he was ultimately saying the ultimate truth, that this is all about love. And love has no characteristics of vengeance or pride. Love does not force people to be loving. It doesn't work the way our human love works. And most of us live in a human love that is absolutely treacherous to our health, our well-being. It really is. It's conditional, and we just don't really live in it. We don't really want to live in it. We want what we want that satisfies our intellect, our emotionality, and our human weaknesses. And we coddle human weakness and make it okay to have it. So with all that being said, and I just said it, we tend to look at our life from the point of view of, shall we say, higher and lower viewpoint. I am higher than you, or I am lower than you. I think in terms of reality being a caste system, a social system, the reality of maybe an illness, or the reality of being poor, or all of these things. we have all sorts of ideas about our reality. When all the time this quote-unquote reality is going on, the real truth, the real reality of truth lives within us. So, Gabriel, you're kind of looking for a statement. You're looking for me to say, you know, this is the ultimate truth. This is the real truth. God is love is my answer. But instilled in that, insinuated in that, is a lot of things that the average human mentality cannot deal with, cannot offer, cannot understand, and would not sacrifice. There is a great deal of sacrifice needed if you are going to awaken to the real truth, as you put it in your email. You're going to have to become a different kind of person. And most of us don't do that. We don't live that different kind of person. We don't even know how to be that different kind of person. And the reason we don't know is because we think in terms of our average mentality, our psychology. When you are talking, or I am talking about love, I am talking about the depth of love. I am talking about going beyond psychology, beyond the beyond, as the Buddha said. To want love more than wanting what I think is love. There is a lot of disciplines to the ultimate truth that you want, and you can't just get it in your human psyche. Every day, think of it this way, Gabriel, every day of your life, truth has passed in front of you. Every day of your life, the ultimate truth is staring you and me in the face. And so we have to ask ourselves, why don't I get it? Why is this so hard for me to get? Because my mentality is parochial. Your mentality is parochial. It is narrow. And when you think about it, how can I convey to you the experiences I have in this great love with your mind that is skeptical, even petty? Can't be done. You're going to have to meditate. And actually, dear, you're going to have to find this for yourself. You're going to have to find the ultimate truth for yourself. Don't listen to me. Find the ultimate truth in you. Meditation. Please forgive me. Namaste. Which leads me to the next question. From Jesse from Sacramento. What is life? He gave me a very long email about his philosophy. And then stuck in the middle there, Greg, what do you think is life? Life is a very difficult thing for people, even though they are in the midst of it. It's like the fish in the sea that runs to its mother and says, "Mommy, Mommy, we have to find water or we will perish." We are already in life. But the life that each of us experiences is very different. Why? Part of it is our mentality, our mental acuity, the level of which we trust our thoughts and live out our emotions. The more I do those things, the less understanding and awareness I will have. First, you need an understanding about life, and that comes from the way we think. That comes from maybe scientific information, blah, blah, things like that. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But to just stay there is a problem. So I can understand the theories of life, quantum theory. I can understand those things, maybe. But to go a little deeper and go beyond Greg's understanding into his awareness of life. Now that's something different. Understanding life, intellectual, philosophical. But having an awareness of life, that's something totally different. To have an understanding of life, to have a deep, profound awareness, those are two different things. So what do I have to do to have the awareness, which allows me to not only recognize what is happening, but to be enfolded by what is happening, to be completely blessed by it. I have to give up my understanding. And this is a very difficult thing for a lot of people to do. They must give up their understanding. If I do not give up my understanding, if I merely live by the conjecture of my thoughts and my beliefs, if I interpret this lifetime based on my philosophy, based on my emotional acuity, my emotional mentality, my mental acuity, and how I put things together, I will miss the entire experience of life altogether. And this is what people do. It is amazing to me to run around and watch people, both in my work and as what I like to call when I'm a civilian. I love watching people, and they're swimming in this thing called life, and they don't even know where they are. They don't know the gravitas of how they live. They don't understand their basic nature. They don't see the opportunity that is here, the blessing that is here. And more than that, they don't know where they are. I mean, literally, they don't know where they are. They think they're, for instance, here in Monterey or Carmel. They think they are with their friends or their family. They think that. They believe Tolle when he says that there is only the now. That's not true. There is no now. They believe in all of these things, but they don't have the experience of it because they're so busy intellectually trying to deal and define what life is. So they miss it. Everywhere you go, you're in a miracle. Everywhere you go, this is an experience that is beyond the conceptual ideas that maybe Jess has or Greg has. So I don't limit my life to concepts. And when you find yourself lost in this world because you think this is life, the world is life, you will miss. What did Jesus say? To live in the world, but not let the world live in you. To walk the middle path, as the Buddha talked about. What are you doing right now as you're listening to this answer that I am giving? Are you in the world or are you in life? And do you think the two are one? Well, life can be a part of your world, but it is not the world. Life gives you the opportunities of the world. But the world is something different. It is manufactured by my ego, by my perceptions, by my bias. I don't see the world because it's my bias. It's the way I look at things from the way I was raised in my genetic heritage. And if I am busy doing that, which I call the Gregory, then I will miss life. You have to sacrifice your world for the sake of gaining your life. And if you're not willing to do that, you will find your meditations very frustrating, and they will not produce, quote unquote, what they could offer to you, which is insight, the ability to go beyond the concepts of your bias. People will say to me, I meditate, 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 nothing ever happens. Well, the reason nothing ever happens is because of human bias. And that bias is what has created the idea and the ideal that meditation should produce something new inside our brain, inside of our perceptions, should change our bias or confirm our bias or whatever. This is all incorrect. To say the least, it's incorrect. I've been a meditation teacher for many years, and I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, most people don't meditate because they won't meditate. It isn't about the meditation itself. It is about they won't give up. They won't surrender to something deeper and more profound that lives within them. That vibration of love, that continuum, that beauty of love. They just won't do it. They're afraid. Everybody is afraid. What is life? Jess, to you, it will be whatever you think it is. To another, it will be whatever they emotionally believe it is. But to the meditator, it simply is. Without bias, without opinion, without a doubt. Please forgive me. Namaste. Every so often I'll get an email like this one. This is from a man named Hanson, who lives in Southern California. He says that he prays day in and day out for good and everything, but it never happens. So he asks, what is prayer? Most people think of prayer as the beseeching of God to grant them a wish, like the Wizard of Oz. And we think a lot of crazy thoughts. I will tell you what prayer is to me. It is everything I do in the world. It's how I touch my food. It is how I talk to you. It is how I live in this world as a prayer. Prayer is everything we are and do in this world. And all of our prayers are answered, so to speak. They become manifest. So if I live in the prayer of hostility, or I live in the prayer of human bias and prejudice, if I live in the prayer of anger and hatred, I will miss everything that is substantially important. Most people are hard-hearted. They live in the hardness of their hearts, their human heart. And they never see the meaning of their life or the meaning of any significant act that they do in the course of a lifetime. Every gesture you make, Hanson, is a gesture of prayer. It doesn't matter what it is, from wiping your butt to greeting someone you love, a friend, a family member, to how you pay your bills. Everything is about prayer. Now you have to decide how that prayer is going to work and what it means to have prayer. If you live in the continuum of your heart, you will find the sacredness of everything you do. Prayer is realizing the sacredness of the moment. Prayer is the result of meditation. And most people, because they do not meditate or cannot meditate or refuse to meditate or don't believe in meditation, they are the results of their psyche, their pathology, their psychology. Not good. But if you can be the result of your silence, the result of your quietude, you can live, move, and have your being in a quietude, in a solitude, in a silence that makes every gesture of your life a prayer. Gotta go. Thank you, Hanson, for your beautiful question, and bless you. Forgive me. Namaste. Well, there we are, our first weekend in December 2020. I hope you have a beautiful weekend. Thank you for listening. And please forgive me, eh? Namaste.